You're listening to the LA Rams Report's Flipping the Tables podcast.
First and 10 from the 27. Warner back to throw. Rainbows the far sideline, and it is caught by Isaac Bruce. Makes a move to the 30, 25, 20, and they won't catch him today.
Yes. 73.
Touchdown Rams!
73 yards for the Reverend Ike.
And now, here's your hosts, Josh Webb and Cameron Worrell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to an all-new Flipping Tables podcast. I do apologize about our hiatus. I'd like to say that this week was my fault. However, the previous week, out of deference to Cam, we took the week off. And Cam, I figure there could be no perfect way to start this podcast, I think, than for you to say a couple words about your recently departed teammate, because, you know, I just feel like Brian deserves better than some of the stuff that's being written about him right now, and we have a platform to do that. So I'll turn the mic over to you, Cam, and let you take it from here and say whatever it is that you need to say.
Yeah, thanks. It is, you know, it is unfortunate that we live in the time that we live in where, you know, if you can get a story and make a headline, people are going to publish pretty much whatever they can. But nonetheless, you know, B-Rob, Brian Robinson, was a teammate of mine in Chicago. He's a Fresno State alum, played before I played, but as soon as I got to Chicago, as soon as he found out that I was a Fresno State guy, you know, he, at that point, he was a, you know, 8 or 9 year veteran, ended up playing, I think he played 14 or 17, played a long time in the NFL. And as soon as he found out I was a Fresno State Bulldog, man, he just took me under his wing. He was undrafted. I was undrafted. You know, every day he would come up to me, ask me how things were going, told me not to get frustrated if I wasn't getting any reps. You know, take advantage of every opportunity you have to put yourself on film, whether it was a walkthrough, scout team, didn't matter. So he just took such an interest in me and really kind of showed me the way to sustain a career in the NFL as an undrafted guy, as a guy buried on the depth chart. You know, really, I owe 6 years in the league to B-Rob because, you know, he told me, look at yourself as harshly as you can look at yourself and really understand what you can't do. And then look at those deficiencies and figure out a way, one, that you can try and improve them, but two, find a role that fits what your skill sets are. And for me, that was being a special teams demon and, you know, having the mental capacity to step in and play whatever safety position, nickelback, whatever it was that my team needed at the time, I could step in and be that guy, and the coaching staff was comfortable enough with me in my preparation to put me in that position. You know, he got me to understand what that takes and how you can carve out a career as a dude like me, bottom of the roster type of a guy, you know, guy who would do anything on the field that, you know, I was asked to do. And that's how I stuck around. And, you know, he was the ultimate professional, worked hard, worked at practice every day, you know, loved to have a good time, was always laughing, always making fun of people. But everybody loved him. And when it was time to work, he was ready to work. And if you didn't work, he was going to let you know it was time to work. He just, you know, kind of that perfect teammate where, you know, you knew that he cared about you. You knew he wanted you and the team to be successful, but loved to have a good time. You know, loved to give guys a hard time over anything. Took it as well as he could, you know, give it at times, just, you know, a dude that was I don't know one person who would say a bad thing about him, whoever had him as a teammate. Just he loved you. He showed it to you in his actions and his words. And, you know, it's sad, man. The world is worse off that B-Rob is not a part of it, because, you know, he's a big, imposing, physically, you know, imposing type of a guy, but, you know, just a heart of gold and a guy who would literally give you the shirt off his back if that's what it took to help you better your, you know, position in life. And like I said, man, I owe my entire professional career to his advice, and not just on the football field, but the things I'm able to do now off the football field. It all came from finding out and figuring out a way to carve a path to be successful, and that all came from B-Rob. And, you know, it was a sad day in Bulldog land. It was a sad day in Chicago and Arizona and everywhere that he played. You know, I talked to some old teammates, and, you know, everybody said the same thing, man. Such a great individual. He'll be missed. He's missed right now. You know, just thinking when I heard that he passed of, you know, all the conversations I had with him. And, you know, I tell this story all the time. Ted Washington was in Chicago my rookie year. Ted Washington was the most physically just scary individual I've ever come across. And he hates rookies with a passion. I mean, to the point where, you know, Hall of Fame has some narrow hallways. If you walk down the hallway and Ted's walking the other way, like, I would hug the wall not to get in his way. And he would just stare at you with these big red eyes. And luckily, B-Rob saved me a few times, because Ted was, you know, that veteran guy who liked to pick on rookies. And then B-Rob, I want to say B-Rob saved my life a couple of times when I was a rookie and allowed me to get out of some things that could have been pretty embarrassing, at least. So, you know, I owe him a lot. But, you know, that day, man, I hopefully, you know, whatever comes after this life, that, you know, B-Rob has found a place where he's happy and he's content, and, you know, just he'll be missed.
I agree with you, man, and I won't spend really much time on it because I think it's negative, but I'll say this, man, and it's really just because you can kind of see who a person is by the reactions of others when they pass on. I think that the immediate reaction of people says a lot about the type of life that they lived. And I found myself pissed off, angry, and had to, like, step away from my computer about some of the headlines that people are writing about B-Rob. And really, I get why they have to print some of the details that they do, but there are outlets out there that are just straight trash, man. And, yeah. And the way that they're marketing their headlines about his death, and they know who they are. They know exactly who they are, these outlets. If you're listening, you're trash. You're trash and you know it. And you should never be writing headlines like that, man. A man deserves more than that, and I think you could clearly see, but not just your reaction, but the immediate reaction of those in the league, that B-Rob was the type of guy who would do anything for anyone, and regardless of how he passed or who he was with when he passed, it doesn't matter, man. What matters is how he lived. And how he lived was in such a way that benefited other human beings. And that's how we are going to remember him. And those other outlets can do whatever the hell they want, and they'll just know that it's trash. And we'll leave it there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, man. It's one thing to write the type of things that are out there about somebody who's alive and who can defend themselves, who can give their side of the story, who can elaborate on the details. It's another thing to throw those things out there when the man can't say anything. You know, the trash that you're writing is the only thing people will read about it, and I think it's disgusting. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just like you said, it's trash. It's complete trash, and they know it's trash, and that's why they write it.
Well,
that's why they make it up like they do.
I would physically fight somebody over that. Like, seriously. Like, I just imagined being you when I read those headlines, and that's how, like, furious I got. Like, I would physically fight somebody. If any outlet ever wrote that about a friend of mine, like, freedom of the press or not, like, I would physically fight somebody over that. Like, there are proper ways to do things, man. You can explain the details without doing what they did. And, you know, we're not going to give it the courtesy of repeating the outlet's name or the content of their article on this show. So, you know, dig it up if you want, but that's where we're going to leave it. And we're going to move on. We're going to talk about some good old LA Rams football. And I want to get your thoughts, Cam, coming out of OTAs. Obviously, the expectation is that Goff will probably be the starter, but at least on paper right now, he's the number two. Does this jive with everything you expect at this point? I mean, this is pretty much procedural, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we've talked about Goff a few times in regards to where he will probably end up on the depth chart. But, you know, you very rarely do you have a guy just come in and immediately you anoint him the number one guy, at least at the quarterback spot. So, you know, you make him work his way up the depth chart. You give him the necessary reps with the first teamers, you know, throughout OTAs and throughout training camp and mini camp and things like that. But, yeah, this is pretty much what we expected, that he'd be number two going in, but with the opportunity to obviously work his way up to being the starter on opening day, which is what I fully expect happens. But yeah, this is pretty much par for the course when you're talking about a number one quarterback working his way up during training camp.
And, you know, you've read the same things that I've read coming out of OTAs. What's been your impression about Goff and you know, where he's currently at? He obviously had that really awful day where they were doing 7v7 and 11-on-11, and I think he threw something like 5 picks. But that's going to be by design. And especially when you've got a defense as stingy as what the Rams offer, there are going to be days when Jeff Fisher's, you know, he's a defensive guy. He probably set that practice up with a big-ass smile on his face and was like, okay, rookie thinks he's doing well, now it's time to shake it up, you know? Like, and he hit that reset button on Goff real quick. How much of a learning experience do you think that day will be for Goff?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be very valuable, and you know, the entire offseason is valuable. It's funny because it's tough to buy into, you know, the things that you read in the offseason or what goes on in the offseason. Like, for instance, and I'm not throwing Devontae under the bus at all, but, you know, last year coming out of Packers offseason training, Devontae was the MVP of the Packers offseason. And then he gets into his second year and he struggles, you know. Jordy Nelson goes down and Devontae has to play a bigger role. He wasn't ready for that role, but everything coming out of the offseason was this dude's ready to take that next step. So you always have to take things with a grain of salt. But when it comes to especially young quarterbacks like what Jared Goff is, I think the just being exposed to what he's being exposed to every day is, I mean, paramount in his development, because he is seeing things he's never seen before as far as trying to read a defense or looking at post-snap or pre-snap adjustments, things that he has to do on the fly, and they have to become second nature for him to really lead this Rams team the way that, you know, Jeff Fisher and the organization hopes that he will. But, you know, when you have a day like that where you just totally, you know, I don't want to say get exposed, but just totally get defeated, and doesn't seem like anything is working for you, I mean, I think those days are very valuable, because then you really take that objective look at yourself, at your system, at how you fit, at the issues that you had that day, and you try to correct them, try to not make that same mistake again. Once you see something, yeah, you can make a mistake the first time you see it, but the second time you see it, you shouldn't make that mistake. The fifth time you see it, you should understand how to beat it, and that's where Goff is in his progression. He's going to have days like that. If he starts for the Rams, he's going to have games like that. He's going to have games where he probably throws four picks just because he sees something new and he's not sure how to react to it, and he makes mistakes. So, you know, fully expected that those types of things happen. And, you know, if Goff is wired the way that it seems like he is, and at least the way the Rams hope that he is, he's going to take those, he's going to learn from them, and he's not going to do those same things again. That's what you want to see. If he throws five picks in an OTA practice, that's totally fine. You don't want him to throw five picks the next practice when he's seen the same things. And, you know, I don't think Jared Goff is going to be a guy who doesn't have that ability to move on and prepare himself in a better way.
Yeah, and the comments that Goff even gave to the press following those OTAs were exactly what you wanted to hear. Rather than being despondent over his performance, I mean, he said, obviously, I want to be playing better, but these are the types of days that help you when the season starts. Basically saying what you just said, you want to have them now because it gives you the advantage of seeing what a real NFL defense is going to be bringing at you. And when you got somebody like Greg Williams who can dial up the defenses that the Rams can put on the field, honestly, I think it's a huge plus for Goff. He sees these bad days as a huge plus, and that's what you want. You want your quarterback seeing a negative as a positive. I mean, mentally, you want that. Not every negative do you want him to see as a positive, but you get what I'm trying to say here, what I'm hinting at. You want him to be able to rebound from these things, have the short-term memory you expect a franchise quarterback to have, and to sort of put a silver lining on what's a crappy day. Hey, man, I'm a rookie going against one of the best defenses in the NFL. Like, if this didn't happen, I would have kind of been shocked at how well I was playing, is I think the gist of what Goff basically said. So I agree with you that it's completely paramount to his progression, and Goff seems to feel like it's paramount to his progression. So we're on the same page as management, who seems to be on the same page with Goff. So, now that we've covered the Goff portion of this podcast, I want to spend a little time talking about some cool community service work. The Rams have already begun work out here trying to get themselves in with the community, and so far they've done a bang-up job. Not only have they replaced an entire youth football program's stolen gear, but now they've gone and built a playground in Inglewood. You've done this stuff, Cam. Just how important is this stuff to the team building concept of getting your guys ready for the regular season? Or is this just sort of the stuff you have to do because you're a millionaire?
Not at all. I'm sure there are a few guys who probably feel that way. This is just an obligation and something they have to do. But, you know, if you're thinking of the Rams as an organization, you know, they're trying to reestablish themselves as the LA Rams. So there's no better way to do that, number one, than to win. But number two, it's to go out in the community and have a presence with your fans, and the Rams have done a good job since they've been back in LA of getting out there and, you know, not just doing it for the PR, not just doing it, you know, so they can, you know, get the good headlines. They're doing it because when you are an NFL organization and you exist in areas all across the country that have pockets of poverty, of you know, schools like the one they worked on in Inglewood, when you have those situations, it's your responsibility to help those schools, those people better themselves and give them, you know, the opportunities maybe they didn't have before and better their position. So I'm glad the Rams are doing this. I think it's awesome. As players, you know, I know a lot of rookies were out to build this playground. I think it's so important. You know, in Chicago, we were rookies. We would go, you know, once a month or twice a month to a food depository. We would pass out bags of food to people who needed them. We would put bags of food together for needy people. And, you know, not only are you doing something good, not only do you feel good about yourself, but I think it really helps ground people because, you know, you get to the NFL, there's money everywhere. You're in these great facilities. You have this great equipment. You know, you're coached by some of the best coaches on the planet. You
first
really
class
need to,
accommodations, basically,
exactly,
wherever you go.
Right, which is maybe the number one thing I miss about the NFL is the first class accommodations. But when you go out and you do that community service and you see the impact that it has on people, on the same people who attend your games, who come to training camp practices, who root you on every day, it really helps you put your life, your career into perspective. And I think it's so valuable, especially for young players. You know, older players, I went to schools, I gave speeches, I went out to these, you know, build a park. I did that all the time. And it really is rewarding. It really does help you keep your career into perspective. And when it seems like the world's against you and, you know, you've lost three games in a row and everybody around the building is just in the dumps and people are getting fired, you know, it really does help you put that situation into perspective when you look at, you know, where other people are or can be in life. And I think I can't say enough good things about doing this, about the Rams doing this, about it, the Rams players getting out and doing this. It's just, it's so valuable in a community. And you know, I'm glad they started and I hope they continue at this pace.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. There's something about putting your life into perspective. I always used to think I was having a hard time, and then I'd go with my friend or something to dialysis, and you sort of see people struggling to maintain, just to live, and you're like, you know, so I lost about 80% of my income. This person's lost their organs, you know, they have to have a machine perform basic bodily functions for them. Like, you know, I could have it so much worse. And then I think the real slap in the face for us, for, you know, the people who need that wake up call is when you see how positive and uplifting some of these people are. And how graceful they deal with some of these things. And you're just like, man, I'm sitting over here bitching. This person has stage 4 terminal cancer and is living their life. You know, like I owe myself better than what I'm currently doing. And it's just, that's what I mean by that slap in the face. It's like, you need to check yourself sometimes on these pity parties and realize that things could always be so much worse. You know, you get a chance to do what we love every single day. Things will work themselves out. Life is filled with hills and valleys, man. And you just kind of got to weather the storm, but everything tends to even out in the end. And just getting that dose of reality injected into you almost like a drug is can be in many ways just as intoxicating. It can refuel your mental desires. As you said, like you hit a 3-game losing streak and you visit like a pediatric cancer ward and all of a sudden you're just like, man, the hell with this 3-game losing streak. You know, you place your problems in perspective. And you go out there and you focus on what needs to focus on, and everything else comes naturally. The losing streaks end, you know. You start to win a couple of games, and it you just see things differently after spending these sorts of experiences or doing these sorts of things. And I think it's great for the league, and I applaud the Rams because they've been so efficient at this. whether it was in St. Louis or certainly now here in Los Angeles, they've wasted no time getting as involved as they can.
Yeah, I think it's great. And you know, I think when you have a, like all NFL teams do, you have a billionaire owner who does these things, you know, with his own business or in his own personal life, I think that message permeates throughout an organization. And then the Bears were huge on it. The Bears were so big, you know, the Halas family, the McCaskey family still owns the Bears. And, you know, they were there when the Bears and the NFL was nothing, barely hanging on. And now that they have grown to what they've grown to, you know, they still go out and do an excellent job in the Chicago community of supporting. And, you know, the Rams have done that in their short time in LA, and I hope they continue to do that. And I think they will. I think it's, you know, something the organization takes very seriously. And it's great to see. I bash the NFL any chance I get. There are so many issues that come up, but stuff like this is truly valuable. And it truly is a good thing that, you know, most of the NFL organizations take this as seriously as we've seen the Rams in their short time in LA do.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of those guys who's been out there getting pretty active and ingratiating himself with the community also had a bit of on the field, I guess you could say it's news. I don't really know if you count so much as news as music to a player's ears. Pro Football Focus put out their 101 top NFL players, man. And not only did a couple of Rams make the list, but Aaron Donald jumped into the top five as the number four player overall in the NFL. Now, PFF did justify some of it by saying, like, look, we understand he doesn't have the longevity, but they said we're not going to hold that against him just based purely on what this guy has done and what it seems like the consensus opinion is that he's going to keep doing. Like, this guy seems to be as surefire as you'll get in today's game. And they said something to that effect in their ranking. Where do you come down on Donald at number four overall? Too high, too low, just right?
Man, it's tough. I think by the end of 2016, he'll be number one. That's what I think. I think he'll be the single most dominant player in the NFL, regardless of position. Because he's been in the league for 2 years. Like the guy has not even, you know, reached the ceiling of what his potential is, and it's impossible for you to do that 2 years into the league. You continue to learn, you continue to improve yourself physically, your coaching staff continues to evolve with the way they place you in positions to be successful, and that's what I'm expecting to see more of out of the Rams defense. Putting Aaron Donald into different spots on that defensive line to get him a better matchup, to try to alleviate some double teams. That's what I see Aaron Donald morphing into this year. Just like J.J. Watt has kind of morphed into not just the 5 technique and the 3-4 anymore. They play him all over the line of scrimmage. They line him up with Jadeveon Clowney on the same side, things like that. Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn on the same side of a defensive line is going to just wreak havoc for offenses this year. So, like I said, I think Aaron Donald at the end of the season will be talked about. He already is, you know, spoken of as being the best or one of the best interior defensive linemen in the game. But after this season, I think people are going to talk about him as being the single most dominant player in the NFL. That's the type of projection that I have for him. And, you know, nothing tells me that that's not going to happen. Humble dude, a guy who works hard. I think the sky is the limit for this guy, and he will start getting that national recognition. It helps that he plays in L.A. now, but he's going to start getting that type of recognition because he's going to truly be a dominant force this year.
And how much does the Copels addition, like, how much is that going to set off Aaron Donald as well? I mean, sometimes it's these little key additions that just, they create situationally perfect circumstances, I guess, for another player to excel, to step up. And do you think that the addition of Copels is going to have an effect on Donald's production?
Yeah, I think anytime you can add in not just a piece on the defensive line that is going to garner some attention, but when you can add in a veteran piece like Quinn Copels, I think that it does two things. One, it changes the way offensive lines can protect against the Rams. When you have, you know, three guys on that defensive line that you really have to pay attention to, like, you can't key on Aaron Donald every snap. You have to change up the way you protect. Otherwise, Copels or Robert Quinn, they're going to have a field day. And two, it brings another veteran on that defensive line to help Aaron Donald continue to develop. Like, I don't care how good you are 2 years into the NFL, there are so many things that you can learn from veteran guys like Quinn Copels. Just little tricks of the trade, things that you don't really think about watching film, an offensive lineman and the way he's aligned or the stance that he has, things like that, that I think Aaron Donald is going to continue to, you know, develop with. That's why I think, you know, his ceiling is so high and he hasn't even gotten there yet. I think there are, you know, some really good things that are going to happen because of the other pieces on this defensive line, and Quinn Copels coming in is going to be a big part of that. I think Aaron Donald is going to benefit tremendously from having him in the room with them every day, you know, from having him lined up with him on that defensive line. He's going to make things a little bit easier for Aaron Donald when it comes to defeating protections and getting some space to maneuver.
And where do you, and I know that you kind of answered this, but I'm going to beat an answer out of you. Are you officially saying too high, too low, or just right on number four?
I think it's too low. You know, it's tough because, you know, Antonio Brown had a great year, who was number three ahead of him. Gronkowski is, I mean, he's the biggest, you know, matchup problem in, I think, in NFL history. And then you have J.J. Watt up top. The reason why I think Aaron Donald is a little too low is because, you know, these rankings are for 2016, entering 2016. It's not what you've done in the past. It's not your resume up to this point. It is the top players for 2016, and I think Aaron Donald is going to have a maybe not a better statistical year than J.J. Watt, because J.J. Watt lines up outside and has so many more pass rushing opportunities. But when you look at disruptive forces in the NFL, Aaron Donald is going to be at the top of that list at the end of 2016. That's why I think he's too low on this list. I mean, I would have put him number two behind Rob Gronkowski. That's where I would have put him on this list. I think Gronk is just too difficult. Like, you literally cannot stop Rob Gronkowski. I think you can stop J.J. Watt. You can stop Aaron Donald. It takes a lot of attention. It takes a lot of bodies to do that, but Rob Gronkowski, you can't. You literally can't stop him. Even if you double team him, he can find ways to get open. That's why I think he's number one, but I would put Aaron Donald right behind him at number two.
And you know what's crazy about that? And I'm only going to spend a half second. No, the hell with it. I'm not even going to talk about it. I was just going to say, like, the Patriots have had so many tight ends over the years, and they really thought they had something with Hernandez. And,
oh, they did,
and,
and
Gronkowski. But I don't want to be that person that says, you know, hey, let's look at what a murderer could have contributed to a team, you know?
Like, right.
It's stunning to think of what Gronkowski's been able to accomplish through the lens of there were different plans and the Patriots almost had to do an about-face and focus all of the attention on him. and everybody knows it's going to him, and there's still nothing you can do about it.
Right.
It's like Shaq.
Right. It is like Shaq, where you just literally can't have an answer for him. Sure, double team him, but he's strong enough to get through that double team and make a catch. Shaq was strong enough to get through that double team and dunk on somebody. There was a point in time where Aaron Hernandez was the best, you know, tight end on the Patriots roster, and that was with Rob Gronkowski. And, you know, I don't think his ceiling was quite as high, but at that point, I thought Hernandez was going to be the star. And, I mean, obviously, we're not going to get into him too much because he's a horrible human being. But, yeah, it's crazy how Rob Gronkowski has developed over the years.
What did you make of that PFF list? The other two Rams who checked in on that, Robert Quinn, I think, came in, was it 48? I think he was. And I know Todd Gurley was 97. Do you have any problems with where Quinn and Gurley are at?
No, I don't have any problem with that. I think Todd Gurley is going to be really, really good this year. I think he's going to be a huge part of the game plan of this offense, and I think because of that, he's going to put up some really good numbers, and he's going to take a lot of pressure off of Jared Goff. Robert Quinn came in at 77, and I think if Robert Quinn is healthy, that's a slap in the face to Robert Quinn, putting him at number 77. I think people have, you know, they forgot what he did in 2013. I mean, he was as dominant of an edge rusher that, you know, that season the NFL had seen in a long, long time. But it's tough to rank Robert Quinn, you know, higher when you're not quite sure exactly what he's going to be. So I think it's fair to keep him down there. I think it's fair to keep Todd Gurley down there simply because he's had some injury concerns. You know, just like when we're talking about the draft, how valuable is a player when he does have these injury concerns? So you have to take that into consideration, and I think it knocks their value just a little bit, and I think this list kind of does this to the same thing. If Robert Quinn is healthy, there's no way he's not higher than the 77th rated player, you know, in the NFL. Todd Gurley, if he's completely healthy, you could see him, you know, being a top five running back, which, you know, would put him a little bit higher than 97, but can't have an issue with those guys, with the fact that Todd Gurley still hasn't even played a full NFL season, and the fact that Robert Quinn, you know, his best season was 2013. It's been a few years, but I expect Robert Quinn to get back to being dominant, and then Todd Gurley, as long as he stays healthy, he'll get the ball, and when he got the ball last year and he was healthy, you could see the type of damage he can do.
And you know who agrees with you about Robert Quinn is ESPN. Who released their, Bill Barnwell released his top 10 defensive trios, and the Rams, Aaron Donald, Robert Quinn, and True checked in at number 9. How you feeling about that one?
Well, you know, just like when we were talking about Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn after the season, you can definitely see the Rams trio being higher than number 9 at the end of the season. But, you know, it's tough when, like I said, you have Robert Quinn, who hasn't been healthy since 2014, and 2014, you know, was kind of mediocre, at least in comparison to his 2013 season. So you can see that, but I expect Robert Quinn, you know, if he stays healthy, that this trio will be ranked higher than that after it's all said and done in 2016. But going into the season, I think it's fair. You know, Tremaine Johnson has kind of been, I think a lot of people were shocked when he was franchised and, Janoris Jenkins wasn't franchised. You know, we talked about it a million times.
You were exactly shocked.
we thought that happen, or I thought that would happen because he's a better player. And I think this year, you know, playing in LA helps everybody be just more, you know,
notice
everybody will exactly everybody will more exposure playing in LA than St. Louis. So I think Tremaine Johnson will start to get that, you know, one of the top cornerbacks in the NFL, which I think he is, type of talk after the season is over. You look down, I mean, DeAndre Levy's been banged up. The Lions come in at number eight. I think Ziggy Ansah is going to be just a straight beast this year. You have the Texans at seven with, you know, really led by J.J. Watt. Kansas City Chiefs, Justin Houston, Marcus Peters, and Eric Berry. I think it's fair to put them up there. The Jets get Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson, even though I don't know if Wilkerson is going to be there. So it's fair. There's a lot of good trios, you know, ahead of them. The Seahawks, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, and Michael Bennett, you know, I think Sherman's best days are kind of behind them, but, you know, we could argue that till the cows come home.
I think that cornerbacks in general, like you saw it with Nnamdi too, like with cornerbacks, it's not, there's no slow and steady decline. Like once you start to go as a cornerback, like you really go, like you'd better have the ability to transition into playing a sort of safety role if you wish to have an extended career in the NFL. And maybe Richard Sherman can do that, but I have personally thought that Richard Sherman has sort of been on that slide down. I don't know whether it's because he's losing a step or the league just changing a little bit, which, you know, every year the league gets more and more pass happy. Shotgun formation is almost the base for every damn team now. I struggle to come up with teams that actually do line up under center. but the Rams will be one of those teams. Anytime you have these top 10 lists, like, I think that the Rams in general, that trio could be as good or better than anybody in the league. But
yeah,
based on what they've accomplished, I think it's fair to have them at number nine. Now, to a man, I'm not sure that every player you've named is as good as maybe like Aaron Donald on that list. But maybe as the sum of their parts, I'm still not sure that I think number nine is fair to the Rams, but I do think that based off what they have already proven, I don't know that you can go that much higher. Like, I think you'd be hard selling at that point. So I'm cool with it, but you mentioned coverage in there, and we could spend just a half a second before we get into another thing that you were right about. It's going to be a good podcast for you. You've been right about a lot of things. Speaking of coverage, it's worth noting that you'll be biased on this one, but what do you think about the Rams going to be making their new home at ESPN 710 LA?
You're right. I'm a little bit biased because I work for ESPN here in Fresno. But, you know, anytime you can attach ESPN to what you're doing as a franchise, as an organization, then, you know, I think you're doing a great job. I'm not as familiar with the LA market as a lot of people are in regard to what other options they had and who were the possibilities. But, you know, you jump on ESPN down there, then I think, you know, you're going to have that national presence. You're going to have a platform that you can really utilize. And I think the Rams and the Rams fans down there will really benefit from that because, you know, it's going to be Rams-centric. They're going to focus on the Rams for the majority of the year. And I think Rams fans will really enjoy the coverage they get down there on ESPN 710.
Yeah, obviously here on LA Rams Report, we've already got the best of ESPN 710 LA with Ryan and Steve Mason doing the Ramble On when they have the opportunity to do it. So there's a fun connection with LA Rams Report and ESPN 710 LA. So the relationship, as far as we're concerned, is also two thumbs up. But as I said, we're both extraordinarily biased because we've got skin in the game. So, you know, draw your own conclusions. But, you know, I mean, even before I got into this business, like, 710 is pretty much the home for everything. Like, that's what you turn to, you know, in Southern California. So I would say, even as just an, if I were, like, I would think it was a good arrangement because that's what I remember everything being on when I was a kid. You know, you just go to seven, well, not necessarily a kid, but even in my formative years when I really got into sports radio, yeah, ESPN 710 LA was already sort of the deal. But let's move on to something else that we're going to be biased about, and that's that CBS predicts that Higbee could be an impact rookie, new Rams tight end Tyler Higbee. Now, I believe that you said that prior to the Rams even drafting. Like, your love for Higbee is documented on the podcast prior to the draft. You were stoked when they drafted him, and now they're predicting that he could be an impact rookie. So what say you?
Yeah, you know, I think when the Rams drafted Higbee and you know, we kind of looked at, okay, who can make an impact right now? Obviously, the number one overall pick in the draft is expected to make an impact, but, you know, I think Tyler Higbee's going to step into a role, you know, vacated, where he can have a lot of success. You know, a 6'6", 250-pound tight end who can play on the line of scrimmage, but really he's going to be, you know, that vertical threat tight end, that kind of, you know, third receiver, fourth receiver, where you can split him out and he can do some of the things that Cook did in this offense. And I think he's tailor-made to fit in this, you know, system that the Rams are going to run, the way they're going to line up, and the dynamic ability he has to add to, you know, a receiving core that right now is, you know, it's underwhelming. And Tyler Higbee could play a huge role as a rookie. And I expect him to play a huge role as a rookie. And I expect him to have a lot of success because he's going to fit in the, you know, down the hashes, whether he's split out a little bit or on the line of scrimmage, he's going to fit in that part of this Rams offense extremely well, and I expect he and Goff to develop a relationship early on that just continues to blossom throughout the season. And I think at the end of 2016, Tyler Higbee is going to be a name that a lot of people know.
And, you know, there's, I'm not going to say too much on this because we've talked about him so much. Like, you can go back to the very first episode that we recorded, I think, and find documented Higbee love. Like, I am going to, at every chance I get, remind the world that you've called this basically since day one. So I think that just does well for the podcast. Like, it just adds that little bit of extra credibility that you need. Hey, these guys were dead on balls accurate, I believe was the term from my cousin Vinny. But, you know, that provides us with a perfect segue into a listener question. Speaking of impact rookie, do you feel, Christian wants to know, that Michael Thomas will surprise a lot of people? There's been some talk about him in training camp. We've talked about him before on this podcast, saying that this is a guy who could probably get the job done. And Matt Waldman himself came on this podcast and said, I really like this pick a lot more than maybe the national media has made of it. You know, obviously the other Michael Thomas rightfully deserves the attention he's getting. But I believe in the parlance of today's youngsters, people slept on him. And this is a guy who could be an impact rookie. Well, Christian wants to know, do you think he will be?
I think he'll have some sort of an impact, but I don't think he's going to have as big of an impact as say Tyler Higbee will have. But I do think when you have a big body receiver who has had a lot of production in college and who is coming into his rookie year with a rookie quarterback, but I think you can expect that relationship, just like with Tyler Higbee, is going to blossom early, and they're going to develop a rapport. You know, so much of a quarterback-receiver relationship is understanding each other, having a feel on the field, and knowing as a quarterback where that receiver is going to be as a receiver, knowing where your quarterback is going to put the ball. So I think these two guys will develop that early on. The only thing I question is whether Michael Thomas can separate in the NFL. And, you know, I know that, you know, at 6'1", 200 pounds, that, you know, right in that 4'4 range, which is a decent time for that size. But, you know, until I see him do that against NFL cover guys, you know, I have to kind of temper my expectations. But I think he's going to play. I think he's going to have a role in this offense as a rookie if he continues to make strides like he has in the offseason. So, yeah, we'll hear Michael Thomas's name. I don't think he's going to be a huge part of this offense, but he will play a role as a rookie, and the Rams will be glad, you know, that they drafted him at 207, you know, in this year's draft.
Yeah. I think that Michael Thomas is one of those guys that I like. I think he'd be a fantastic story if he did do well. I understand why you have your reservations, and those reservations are completely fair. I just look at a guy like Michael Evans, who, you know, a lot of people, they for whatever reason, felt that he wasn't going to hack it at the NFL level. Like, but as he proved, like, the dude's just a ridiculous beast. Like, he was at Texas A&M what he is with the Buccaneers. A damn fine receiver in a matchup that you probably don't want. So I'm not saying that Michael Thomas is going to become that nightmare matchup just simply because he doesn't have, like, Mike Evans' size, but I tend to look at him and say it always seems to be these guys out of weird colleges that go on to become really flipping good receivers with nothing amazing at the combine. You know, if you were to go back and look at, like, Jerry Rice's numbers, sure, they weren't that jaw-dropping, you know, but, you know, you can't account for heart and work ethic, and I feel like Thomas has all that. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops, but I say your reservations are fair, just that I might be more optimistic than you. That's where I'd leave it. But speaking of an impact, what do you think we can expect from Alec Ogletree this season? Our good buddy Sam wants to know. It's probably Sam Ramirez.
I mean, it's tough to say with, you know, the move that Alec Ogletree has to make, what his impact is going to be. He's going to be asked to do a lot in this system. I mean, he's going to be asked to be the guy in the middle to replace somebody like James Laurinaitis. So, you know, I think he's going to be put in positions to have a tremendous impact. on this defense. And, you know, I think if you look at his physical attributes, if you look at, you know, his size, he definitely has everything that says he can make that transition and he can, you know, be a very good linebacker. It's just, you know, when you're making that type of a position change and everything looks different than how it's looked, you know, pretty much your entire career, you know, I think you're going to have to wait and see a little bit until we see how comfortable he is being that guy in the middle. But, you know, I think he's going to be successful. I think he's going to be, or at least develop into, you know, that voice of this defense that James Laurinaitis was. And he's going to be an impactful inside linebacker. Like, anytime you can add a guy with Alex Ogletree's athleticism, but also pass rush ability to the inside of a defense, I think that just makes you a little more versatile, where you have a guy working the interior of an offensive line who's used to working against the best pass protectors in the NFL. I think because of that, he's going to add a dimension to this defense that even James Laurinaitis couldn't add. I'm not saying he's going to be as sure of a tackler or, you know, have as good of an understanding in the middle of the defense as Laurinaitis did, but he is an elite pass rusher that is now playing on the interior of a defense. Kind of like when Jamie Collins for the Patriots moves inside in their nickel package and rushes the passer. It just adds another dimension to how you can get after the quarterback. I think in that regard, Alec Ogletree is going to make a big impact his first year, you know, as the starting inside linebacker for the Rams. But I think he's going to have to develop a little bit until we are really comfortable with him doing everything, you know, that James Laurinaitis did in the middle of this defense.
I think that's fair, and I think it's also going to be interesting to watch what amounts to a new-look front seven for the Rams. You basically are you know, changing things up from the way that they've been, and the front seven is going to take a minute to click. It shouldn't take as long in theory because a lot of these guys are just twos now stepping up as ones. But there is going to be a bit of that, okay, this is the new number one unit. It's all got to get on the same page. So I think the Rams defense will be more than fine. I'm not worried about it. I think Ogletree will play a big part in that. To what end? I think you probably hit the nail on the head there, but I think everybody on this Rams defensive front seven is going to be expected to do things, as cliche as or vague as that may be, of a prediction, do things, but they're going to be expected to impact the game in some way. Each one of these guys is being given the opportunity to show that they can. And so in return, they will be expected to then do so. So I think that as the line in the front seven continues to grow as a unit, we'll find out, you know, how teams decide to play them will largely dictate, I guess you could say, who eats that Sunday. And I think that the Rams will take that approach to it. Fine. You know, today this team wants to try us up the gut. Let's do that. Okay. This team wants to try us to the outside. Let's do that. You know, however they get played, I think the Rams defense has the personnel in theory to adjust to that. And so we'll see each of these guys impact in their own way, but a different way each week. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think outside of, you know, Aaron Donald or healthy Robert Quinn, who, you know, I expect to make an impact every single time they're on the football field, that, yeah, that's pretty fair. The way an offense is going to attack this defense will dictate who has a big day and who doesn't. You know, and you can probably go around the league and say, you know, against this team that throws the ball a lot, you know, our perimeter guys have a big day. You know, if you're playing the Rams offense, my middle linebacker is going to have a big day because they're going to run the ball right at us all day long. But, you know, outside of Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn, who, you know, are guys who I expect to make an impact no matter what, run, pass, up, you know, behind, whatever it is. But, yeah, the way that these guys are attacked will dictate how productive they are on any given game day.
And what do you think is the timetable, Corey wants to know, for the Rams to actually contend in the NFC West? Is it sooner or is it later, in your opinion?
I think it's right now. There's always a question mark when you have a rookie quarterback starting, which I expect the Rams to have when the regular season starts. But, you know, I've been saying for a couple of years about the Rams, they're a quarterback away from being a playoff team. Their roster is built to be a playoff team if they can get a quarterback to play at, you know, a level that allows them to be a playoff team. And I think even though Jared Goff is going to be a rookie, even though he's going to have some growing pains, I think he's going to be good enough in this offense for them to contend in the NFC West. And I know the Seahawks are what they are. The Cardinals were awesome last year. But the Rams have been competitive within their own division for years now. Now it's time for them to take that next step and really contend in the NFC West. I don't think they're going to win the NFC West this year, but they're going to be there week 14, week 15 with a chance. You know, to win the NFC West, to be a playoff team. I think this year is the year that they do that.
And a uniform discussion here from Mario, who wants to know, what do you make of former Rams wanting the team to go back to old uniforms? Could that be enough to drive a change? And before you get to that, I just want to add that, I look at guys like Cam Newton, you know, who came into the NFL and has an immediate impact. You know, these are guys who can step onto a team that had, you know, a damn good defense. And if you can get them playing at a competent level, you look what can happen. You know, and Jared Goff has every bit the ability with his arm to impact a game the same way Cam Newton can, with his ability just to do all things. Goff opens up a world of possibilities for you with his very gifted arm. So I think, I think the Rams, like you said, will be contenders this year. They just need Goff to win them, like you said, one or two games outside of the division. They've been competitive within the NFC West for years now, but it's been those stumbling blocks and out-of-conference games. You know, you've got to win one or two of those, and all of a sudden, you know, you're a 9 or 10-win team instead of a 7-9. And I think they're going to compete this year. But what say you about the uniforms, man, and where do you come down on them? You still with the old blues?
I'm glad the former players are stepping up and trying to get the Rams to change. I really think the Rams will change, but not until the new stadium is built. That's what I think. I think they're gonna hold on to these, you know, ugly gold and blue uniforms until the new stadium is built, and then they'll unveil their new, you know, yellow and blue old school Rams uniforms. That's what I think. I think they're waiting to unveil that until the stadium is built. You know, they'll do the color rush thing again this year, so we'll see some cool colors out of them. Although I think they're doing the blue instead of the yellow like they did last year, which I thought was awesome. I love the color rush uniforms. I may be in the minority there, but I think that's what they're waiting for. They're waiting until the new stadium is built, and then they'll bring back the old school uniforms with a 2019 or whatever it is twist on it.
Yeah. I think the Rams have been pretty clear on this, stating that they're going to wait until 2019 to address the uniform thing, and it's going to be new digs, new house, you know. It makes the most sense to just wait it out, stick with these ugly things, and do it all at once. It'll give the fans, basically, when the season opens that new year, the Rams want to create what is essentially a new beginning. And they want it, instead of it being staggered out, they want this thing to occur, you know, 2019. They still recognize that these are going to be the odd couple years where St. Louis fans are still butthurt, and they have every right to be. And you know, some are still being petty about it, such as their right. But these are going to be those awkward years. 2019, you know, that's about the appropriate grieving window for losing an NFL franchise. In 2 years, you kind of just got to get over it. And by 2019, the Rams just want to turn a new leaf and say, we are now the Los Angeles Rams. This is our new home. These are our new uniforms. We are the LA Rams. We are, we were, we embraced our time in St. Louis, but it was always, you know, the Los Angeles Rams. It always was and always will be. And that's what 2019 is going to be about. And I think it's really important to Kroenke and the Rams ownership that they have that new beginning all happen at once, because it's sort of a momentous occasion for them, and they want to treat it like that. And I totally respect that. And it sucks for the fans who want to see some of this new stuff, but you kind of just got to stick with it, man. Just, it's a couple more years.
Yeah, a couple more years in those ugly ones, and then they'll bring back some, like I said, the old school colors with a new school twist on it.
Yep. And our final question from Manny, who goes, do you have any thoughts on the Rams partnering with CBS2 in Los Angeles? Kind of a perfect fit. The NFL on CBS is always a good time, so the Rams partnering with CBS2, I guess, is fine by me. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, the Rams, the NFC plays on Fox, right? So I'm sure the preseason games will be on there. They'll have coverage on CBS, too. Not sure how many actual regular season games they can play on CBS, but, you know, to have them the home, it makes sense. Just like, you know, ESPN 710, anytime you have that entity, it's going to be a success, and I'm sure CBS will, you know, do everything they can do around Rams broadcast to, you know, add that extra dimension for the fans.
Yep. And with that, I think that is a good place to call it. We have a few things going up on the site. Matt Lowry dropped a piece on the Rams, wrote up a piece on the Rams doing that community service work we talked about. And I apologize for the annoying tonal sound that we're obviously getting here. We're trying to wrap up, but if you bail out on us now because it's annoying, we get it. But other than that, man, you can catch us on Twitter. My handle is Fight On Twist. His is at Cam Worrell. And Cam, you got anything before we go?
No, man, my summer's starting to slow down. Actually, our last junior high best of the West for passing down is this Saturday down in the Santa Clarita area, so right around Magic Mountain. So some junior high kids trying to win a state championship. So our last event, and then we're off until next February, so just wrapping that up. Other than that, I've been bounced for San Francisco Giants baseball at 9:40. I'm getting back today. I'll be gone next week as well. But the summer is slowing down, and Keep getting it going on the Flipping Tables podcast. Other than that, it should be a kind of a chill summer.
Yeah, and you can obviously keep it locked right here on LA Rams Report for more upcoming stuff. I have an article or two set to go up as well. Believe I have one on Goff as an impact rookie. And now I'm probably going to cut one on Tyler Higbee. I feel inspired. So look for that
This
week's kind of already over. I was on vacation. Pardon me. I still am like, is it Monday? No, it's Thursday. But we will be back at our normal time on Tuesdays, right, Cam? Or are we Mondays now? I can never remember.
Yeah, one of the two.
Monday or Tuesday, we'll be back. So if you have any Rams questions between now and then, feel free to get at us. And it's been our pleasure here. And we will catch you next time on Flipping Tables.